Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
If you're waiting for some elaborate introduction, then here you go. Funny name, serious music. That's the way I've called these guys because they have, it's a father-son duo, and you don't find that very often, but I've labeled that with these guys because I think they really have some cool things to say in a very cool way to say it. Cool sounds. Father-son duo, Tim and Timmy LeBeau are with me today. Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Daniel.
I've got to know your story because I honestly feel a little bit embarrassed. But I'm excited at the same time. I haven't asked you before what your story was. Mm-hmm. I just know you guys sing nowadays, and that's about all I know. I know Tim has a history of some Elvis loves and impersonating loves. Okay. and that whole circuit.
Thank you very much.
You've sung gospel music for a while.
Yes, sir.
And your son, Timmy, is with you now. And I just want to know how it all came to be. So I guess we'll start, as we do most of these things, just go back to the beginning of Tim LeBeau as a child.
As a child. That's too far back.
Can you remember that far? Where were you born?
I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Seriously?
Yeah. I'm a Yankee. But,
wow.
But we moved south when I was 11. We moved to Florida. We lived in Florida for about 8 years, and then I was just turned 18. We moved to North Carolina.
Okay.
And it was funny because I actually dropped the brogue and everything when I moved south.
Mm.
I lost the car and oil.
So how old were you again when you moved to Florida?
4. when I moved to Florida, I was 11.
Oh, okay.
I turned 12 in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then from Florida to North Carolina, mm-hmm. At what point was music, I mean, what'd your dad do or what'd your parents do? What caused you to move?
The rent came due, and no, seriously, during that time, my dad, and still does to this day, not like he did in the past, but we built RVs, travel trailers and campers and things like that. That's what we did in Michigan. But at the time, things were kind of in a turmoil in our church and, mm-hmm. and in a school system where we were at, and my father heard about a Christian school down in Key West, Florida. And and they became friends with the people that ran the place, and so we moved there.
Wow!
And it only lasted a year. The rent came due there, and we had to move again. Things changed, and so we were in Key West for a year, and then moved to Hobe Sound, Florida, which there was a Bible college there, and we moved there to that school. And my dad continued, building the trailers, and I've always worked with him all my life. And then we went from Hobe Sound. Then we moved to North Carolina after Hobe Sound days.
Did you get to be a beach bum kind of kid?
No, I didn't. My background was very strict, as in, we were so strict. We didn't have television. The women all wore their hair up and the long dresses and things. And, mm-hmm. and so we kind of felt like that my heritage, my people, it was like, if you wore a t-shirt almost, you were headed straight for the flames, And it was that strict.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. That was a great time in my life. I learned a lot, and I learned a lot to stay away from.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But the heritage, my background, no, I have no apologies for that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the background. That basis is the reason where I'm at today because of that basis.
Do you know my Jesus? Do you know my friend? Have you
And musically speaking, what kind of musical styles did you grow up with in that heritage?
Yeah, in fact, one of my dad's favorite songs singers was Jim Reeves. He loved Jim Reeves' voice, and Of course, we had, you know, Jim Reeves records around, the gospel part of it. And my mom's was Jack Holcomb. That was her favorite.
Yeah.
And so I listened to a lot of that. And that was maybe where I adapted to my style was from then, from those guys. That was, like I said, it was a beginning. That's what I heard. And it was, you know, it was strictly piano and maybe an organ in the background.
Sure.
Some oohs and ahs. But, man, I mean, drums were an oh-no. They were. And still are today with my folks and those people. You know what I'm saying? The Pilgrim Holiness type people.
Right. And I know you play guitar. Mm-hmm. So when did you pick up that versus singing? Which one of those came first, guitars or just singing or cultivating your voice?
Okay. It's funny you say that. My dad bought me my first guitar when I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a used, of course. I mean, you know, I was raised with a large family. I'm from one of 10 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Of course, mom didn't have them all at the same time. But anyway. Right. But during that time, there was three of us. You know, me, my sister, and my brother. And so we sang in church. Well, my dad saw that I went toward the guitar. And so he bought me, it was called a K-A-Y guitar. Never forget it. And somebody had to fix the neck because it was broken. And my dad had that fixed and, you know, put strings on it. And that's what I learned on. So I was 5 years old when I picked up a guitar and started.
Wow.
And me and my sister and one of the first songs, and I remember this, was at the Lower Light Church in Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan. And they asked us to sing, and one of the first songs that me and my sister sang together was Jesus Signed My Pardon. A lot of people don't know that song, but it was, you know, Jesus signed my pardon, this I surely know, took my place at Calvary so I don't have to go. That was the first song we ever sang in church.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. And, of course, went from there to, you know, then I began to grow up, you might say. Well, I hadn't grown up yet, but I made my journey.
Yeah.
From there, I went to, I'll never forget, they had a talent contest at school. And I always tell, not always, but I tell this story. We used to ride the bus to school, and I was in the fifth grade. And they had a talent contest. And I thought, I'm gonna get in on this, you know.
Yeah,
so then I had electric guitar, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I'd moved up. And I don't even remember the name of the group. And I should do a little study and remember the name of the group. But it was a song called My Baby Does the Hanky Panky. That was
I remember it, actually. I do.
Timmy doesn't remember that, do you?
I do, actually, yeah.
Okay. It's been used in commercials nowadays, hasn't it? I think I've heard it. Yeah.
I don't remember it from that time.
I went to school. I snuck my guitar. Now, get this. My guitar and amplifier. On the bus, I took it out the night before and set it at the road, hit it behind a tree.
Yeah.
So my mom wouldn't see it, you know, because she'd want to know what I was going to do, of course, you know.
Yeah, right.
So I snuck the guitar, and there was a boy never forget it. The boy's name was Ed Metz. And Ed, if you're listening to this, man, I want to get back up with him because the guy, Timmy, the boy was, he was 9 or 10, somewhere in there, 5th grade, 10. So at his age, he played the drums at a pizza place in Ann Arbor, downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Bimbo's Pizza. I remember. And he, at 11 years old, he played drums for a group.
Whoa.
I mean, this kid was, he was something. Whoa. I never forget that. Anyhow, he come up and played drums with me, and we did My Baby Does Like
Hanky Panky. School.
Yeah, it's school. Wow. Yeah, yeah. And I never forget because, man, I never forget the girls going crazy.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, they didn't do that when I sang Jesus Signed My Pardon. And I was drawn to that. I got to be honest. I was. Yeah. I was drawn to that. And from there, it just went from bad to worse.
Oh.
I mean, as far as that part of my life, you know what I'm saying? Because I was drawn to that. Anyhow, so that's.
Well, were there struggles with your family? I mean, as this started to develop, I mean, you weren't even a teenager at this point.
No, sir.
So, I mean, as you get into teenage, now here you are before a teenager, Tim, and you're already giving them what for? and heartache. So, I mean, okay, so this is what, fifth grade you said?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
So from there, I mean, so what music were you starting to become drawn to? Yourself?
Yeah, definitely. The Beatles.
Yeah.
And of course, Elvis was one of my favorites. Has been and still is. I love his gospel, love his music. His delivery, anyhow, and I went from that to, I remember when I was 17 years old, I was playing at my dad's shop. He was gone. And so I was playing my guitar to some 8-track tapes, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, my dad got very upset with me, and he actually gave me a whipping for that, for playing that music. I remember I was 17 years old.
Right. Right.
And I remember looking at him, and my son's over here laughing right now.
17.
I was 17. Yeah, he's still. But that was my last one I ever got. And I remember.
It's probably because you drove off right afterward.
No, I didn't.
Not going to spank me again. Get in my car and leave.
Well, actually, you're right. I
can't wait till it comes my time, Daniel, to tell my story, because people will know that there is some, Christian background with our group here. What are we at now? 11 years old, and we're already
practically
playing
a felon.
Elvis music, and
I know you're right. I know, and that's one thing I'm so proud about.
I'm joking.
You're right though. Having that strict no television, blah 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 background, and I didn't want nothing to do with it. Which is very sad.
Yeah.
And my son came along, and I hope I've instilled in it, and evidently I did, because from the get-go, he wanted Southern gospel, and that makes me tear up. I'm very, sure. very proud of that. Sure. I really am. But that wasn't me. My spirit was different, and I've always told Timmy, I said, if you turn out like me, I said, I'll kill you and make another one look just like you. No, but I made a statement. I said, from this day on, I said, I'm going to sing country music. I was so rebellious. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to sing country music. And I went for it. I really did. I put me a band together when I was 18. Mm. And, of course, moved out of the house, one of those deals. I tried the religion thing for, it didn't stick. I'll be honest, when I was about 18, right in there, I tried the religion.
Tim LeBeau. And here's one from the LeBeau's latest project.
You may know him as your Savior. You may even call him Lord. Great is his salvation, though he wants you to know he's more. He's higher than the highest, deeper than the sea. Every day you walk with him, he'll be all you'll ever need. He'll be your healer. That's the man who was blind but now can see. He'll be your comfort. Ask disciples in the storm on Galilee. He'll be your deliverer. Ask Moses as he's crossing the Red Sea. He'll be all you'll ever need. Ask me. They say time changes everything, but that's not always true. Jesus Christ is still the same. Tomorrow he will be too. He's touched the lives of his children throughout history. Today he's still transforming lives. He's made a change in me. He'll be your healer. Ask the man who was blind but now can see. He'll be your comfort. Ask disciples in the storm on Galilee. He'll be your deliverer. Ask Moses as he's crossing the Red Sea. He'll be all you'll ever need. Ask me. He'll be your healer. Ask the man who was blind but now can see. He'll be your comfort. Ask disciples in the storm on Galilee. He'll be your deliverer. Ask Moses as he's crossing the Red Sea. He'll be all you'll ever need. He'll be all you'll ever need. He'll be all you'll ever need.
Ask me. Tim LeBeau and the LeBeaus, father-son duo Tim and Timmy, are with us in the studio. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we're featuring their latest project. That one's Ask Me. The title of the CD is Sitting on Go.
Well, one might say at least you didn't go to rock and roll or even Motown or anything other than country, because at least country has some inroads with gospel. I mean, there's always an opportunity to, quote unquote, get religious with country music. I mean, always do Amazing Grace tune.
Exactly. You know. And you know what? A lot of people, you know, they say, well, you were in rock and roll. Well, I was in more of a country rock, you know, that southern rock style, you know, a little more drive, you know, like Travis Tritt, you know, drive in the country than what was
Sweet Home Alabama, something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's that style, which was southern rock.
Sure.
And I did that. And I, like I say, it went almost from bad to worse. You know what I'm saying? Went continued down that road.
As involved with country, did you learn a lot through that?
Definitely. Because
religion aside, just from life experience, you learned a lot.
I did. I went to Nashville when I was my first time in Nashville was 21. I was 21. Mm. Went to Nashville. Met up with a lot of producers and country artists. Sang with the Jordan Ayers, of course, did one of my albums with me.
Oh wow!
I met just a lot of, I should have wrote down a lot of the people, but it's not important. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I met a lot of people. Like I say, it was a good experience. It really was. I look back at that a lot of times when I'm in church, and giving a testimony, I say, a lot of preachers will stand up and say things like, oh, there's nothing out here in the world to entice me. And I'm like, well, you never been where I've been, because it was exciting. It was. Listen, scripture even says there's pleasure in sin for a season, and it's pleasure because if it wasn't that, why would you do it? You know what I'm saying? Why would you head for that style and that lifestyle? So
even the scripture tells us, pleasure in sin for a season.
That's it.
It'd be there, if it wasn't true, it wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Well, and that's brought to you a place now with your platform in ministry. I mean, it's like the guy I know, he says, a lot of people can stand up in church and say, I am a sinner. But there are very few you actually believe, So I think Tim, you've got a true story that's behind it, and it may be rough around the edges in some part, but I think you bring that authenticity to the stage. And not that Timmy doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that there's
Daniel. I get it. Okay.
So how long do you stay in the country focus?
Let me say real quick right here. I would trade testimonies with my son any day.
Yeah.
I'm talking about with what I'm living with today. What I'm saying? The past.
Yeah.
Because you don't commit a sin and not pay for it. Sure. Jesus paid the price for us.
Right.
He took care of the sin debt. Okay. But remember this, man. Some preachers might disagree with me, but I'm still paying interest on that. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? Because I still had that sin that I committed, that emotionally, mentally, I still remember. Having said that, I'd trade testimonies with my boy any day. I would.
And there definitely are consequences. Sometimes he smooths over those consequences, but sometimes he doesn't.
Exactly. That's
what I guess I was going to say. I know what you're saying, but at the same time, it's good to be able to relate to people that are hurting. If you've been there before, it's a whole lot easier to. To tell them what you've been through and to tell them about God's grace and how good he's been.
That's it.
It's hard to appreciate God's grace if you haven't had to go through. I've definitely gone through my own things. I know you have probably more scars than I do, but then again, you're older than I am. it's good to go through those things. And like I say, to really, really appreciate God's grace and his forgiveness.
To get on their level, people that are hurt.
Very, very important, because it's so easy. You run into a lot of Christian people that, I say a lot. I'm being careful here, but I'm saying you run into some Christian people that put themselves on a pedestal like they, they have arrived and that they don't sin and that they're, blameless and all these other things. We're human. We're going to make mistakes, and that's why we have God's grace. Makes you really, really appreciate it.
Sure.
Trust me, I need it on a daily basis. If it's something big or something small, we all need God's grace.
That's the voice of Timmy LeBeau, and Tim and Timmy LeBeau are with us, the LeBeaus, and that's the heart of their music, and you hear it in every song they sing, and it's here. And the new project they have is called Sitting on Go. We're going to learn more about it and the making of it in just a moment. This is Daniel Britt and Friends, and you're listening to a new project by the LeBeaus. It's called Sittin' on Go, and I think it's an outstanding project. And the one you did before, we'll talk about that too as we move along. It was equally as good, and some great magicians or brain work that went into it behind the scenes who put their touch to it and really just make these things stand out in the Nashville sense or in the production sense. And we'll talk about who produced it and all. Right. Tim LeBeau is the father, and we have picked up his story from pretty much birth through a phase or a jaunt through country music. How long were you involved with country music all told? I mean, was it decades?
It was right at a decade. Yes. I was 30 when I got back to the Lord. So yeah. Definitely was. Yeah. When I say professional, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Actually making money doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It was about 18 to the 30.
Yeah. Man, 12, wouldn't that be nice? 12 years.
What, make money
doing what we're doing?
Well, on that thought, were there easy points where you were making some decent money making a good, and then there were hard points where you were like the
definitely struggling.
You think about all the waiters in Nashville who are struggling musicians,
yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah, that type of thing. Yeah. You're right. There were those times. Sure was. Yeah, I remember. Oh man, do I remember going back and forth? You know, in an old beat up car. You know, and. Not that I got a new one now, but it just, some struggling times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So at age 30, mm-hmm. you woke up one morning and felt like something went right gave you a message that you listened to?
That's exactly what happened was, let me get to that point. I was in Nashville recording a country album. And the producer at the time, he wrote She'll Be Mine at Closing Time, several songs. Danny Walls, he was the producer at the time. But anyway, he said, let's take a little break from we were recording. He said, I'm going to do a little mix on a gospel album that I'm doing. Mm. And so he put on a song. The title of the song was None Written Down. When they played it over the speakers in the control room, man, just tears come out of my eyes. It was like, it was the strangest thing, which I know now, knew then really, it was the Holy Spirit dealing mm-hmm. with me again. Mm-hmm. And I told Danny, I started scrambling in front of me. I said, man, where's the words of this song? I said, I have to record this. He said, really? You want to record this? Yeah, I do. Cause he had the tracks for it.
Yeah.
And it was a girl actually singing the song.
Wow.
And so he said, you want to record? I said, I do. I said, Danny, I got to do this song. He said, all right, jump in there. So I went in and I sat on the chair there, you know, was in front of the microphone, and I had my headphones on and was listening back to the song of the girl singing it. And so it was just silence when it got done. And the truth of it was I was sitting there, I was crying so hard, and he punched the button. He said, you ready to record? I said, give me a minute. And that's how that song began to touch me.
Yeah.
And I realized, you know what, I'm going the wrong way. And I just felt the Holy Spirit tell me, that, and literally, you know, speaking like, I want you to sing for me. And that just mm-hmm. is kind of what I felt the whole time. I want you to sing for me. And so I didn't turn my life over to him right then. This was in June of 88. And so August the 22nd, I was in my office, and a guy walked in, he sat across from me, I've told the story a lot, but the condensed part is he was from a church in town and came to see me. And I was just had this pressure on me. Just, I knew that if I didn't obey God, if I didn't turn my life over to him, I was going to die and go to hell. That I knew that it was just something I knew and felt it so strongly. And I looked at him and I never forget. And I said, Robert, I said, I'm trying to find God. That was my words. And he looked at me, never forget it. And he just said, well, Tim, he's right where you left him. And that made the most sense to me. He's right where you left him. And you know, that is the basis of salvation. He's always there with us, but we can walk away from him. Mm-hmm. But when he said that, he's right where you left him. And you know, that's when he left my office. And so I began to pray. I said, God, I know what you're dealing with me. I knew it. And let me back up just one day. We went up to the mountains, North Carolina. My band, we did a show for the governor of the state at the time.
Oh, uh-huh.
And And so that afternoon, just before we quit our show, somebody hollered out, and I would do this every once in a while, but I had to be in the right frame of mind. And you know, it's kind of rough to, you know, be singing along, She'll Be Mine at closing time, or The Girls All Get Prettier at closing, something like that.
Yeah.
And go from that to How Great Thou Art.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it just, and it was God again, dealing with me that whole weekend.
Mm.
And someone hollered out, said, sing How Great Thou Art.
Wow.
So before we tore down, you know, the equipment, I sang it. And there was such a presence. I can't describe it. I've sang it before. I've sang it after. But there was something about when I sang it that day.
Yeah.
Even my band, it was so cool. And we were loading up the equipment. You know, it's usually, then it was usually a lot of partying, lot of cussing and what have you. You know, that lifestyle as we're loading up, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was almost dead silence.
Whoa.
And it was just a presence about it. Now, anyhow, so that's when, like I say, when God dealt with me again. And so on that Monday, somewhere between 10 o'clock and noon, I didn't actually look at the clock, but I knew it was somewhere in there. And I told God, I said, I'll serve you from today on. I said, and it was, there wasn't a bright light came in the room. It wasn't like, you know, a lot of people have that experience, and that's great.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
But mine was a commitment. It was like, and God took me at my word.
Like a quiet resolve.
It was. Exactly. A quiet resolve. It really was.
We'll pick up Tim LeBeau's story in a moment and hear from Timmy LeBeau. It's an hour spotlight on the LeBeaus today.
I read it in the Bible, Book of John, chapter 14. Jesus said that he would go and build a place for you. A mansion on Golden Street, down by a crystal sea. Then he said, now I must go away, but I'll leave you a key. It's hanging on a nail, on an old rugged tree, just outside Jerusalem, at a place called Calvary. That key can open heaven's door and lock the gates of hell. You'll find that key on a tree, hanging on a nail. Money to buy that heavenly home. The price was paid in full 2,000 years ago. The title deed was signed in blood, and there's a guarantee that all who come to that old cross will find the blood-stained key. It's hanging on a nail, on an old rugged tree, just outside Jerusalem, at a place called Calvary. That key can open heaven's door and lock the gates of hell. You'll find that key on a tree, hanging on a nail. That key can open heaven's door and lock the gates of hell.
It's our hour spotlight on this father-son duo called the LeBeaus. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends.
So this was, again, about 30? Yeah. You're about 30?
Yeah. It was 1988. Yep. August of 88.
And what's going on with up until this point or whatever with marriage and with
that
child rearing and stuff?
Right. Well, we had Timmy when I was 28. So he was a year and a half old actually when I got, and I went back to my roots, and in doing so it took me a total different direction, the strictest of strict living, and it put a real strain on my marriage. It really did. Yeah. For 7 years there, actually, it was the strangest thing. I've actually looked back at this time almost with regret during that time. Even though I was trying to serve the Lord, I was actually serving people.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, during that time. And so it put a strain on our relationship. We were actually separated for a time. And then I began to pray about that. And I said, this isn't right. You know what I mean? I just knew that this is not right. I've got a son at home that, you know, you're picking up on weekends and things. And it's like, you know what, what's wrong with this picture? And here again, still trying to serve God. I really was, but I was serving people. I gotta be honest with you. And so during this time, like I say, Timmy and I, we were close then. We're you know, of course closer now. We were father son then, but it was, I'd rather be, you know, dad and boy. Does that make sense? Some might sound corny. Yeah. Too many times say, this is my father. And I like Tim to say, this is my dad. You know, there's a difference. Anybody can be a father.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? And and so, but anyway, so from that time, like I say, still trying to sing in church, and I was doing the solo thing, you know. But then, I realized that something's wrong with this picture. And so I began to pray and said, God, you're going to show me, or not show me, but just lead me. I feel like I'm supposed to be the dad again, and not just a weekend fella, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
So I went, and I'm going to tell you, God worked a miracle. I mean, you ask anybody that knew us then, and for me and Susan to be together today, it's a miracle that God put some things back together in our lives, and when he did that, that's when I began to, and we'll pick up here, is where I began to find out what talent my son had.
Oh yeah.
In fact, the first song, it was really wasn't a song. It was a recitation thing that Timmy did with me called Daddy Teach Me How to Pray.
Uh-huh.
And if you listen to that song, of course, Timmy does the talking part in it. And I tell this real quick. He was 7 years old when this took place. Am I right, Timmy? Were you seven when you did the first Teach Me How to Pray?
Sounds right.
7 or 8. And I never forget him sitting on the chair, you know, in the recording studio part. Okay. Uh-huh. I'm in the control room. Yeah. So there's glass. He can't hear me and the engineer.
Yeah.
And I was playing producer, you know, like, okay, Timmy, this too. But I'm telling you, from the day one with this kid, and it's the truth, and I never told him how to sing, what to sing, how to, it was God given to him.
Wow.
And so I let that part of his career, if you will, and his ability shine through. There's no sense in me saying, no, dude, man, he had it then. And I don't forget one of the parts, he said something over the mic, and then he started waving his arms like this. he's going, and I'm like, oh, he wants to stop. So he stopped, and he goes, Dad, it sounds like I'm saying you even instead of you even. And he picked up on that.
Wow. And I guess I didn't understand at the time that I could just say stop.
Yeah,
I felt like I had to lean away from the mic and wave your down arms.
Because he couldn't hear us.
Yeah, I can't hear them.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
So. And he did. And anyway, from that time on, then I realized talent. I did. I'm like, wow, you know, this is an itty bitty kid just being cute. You know, I'd bring him up on stage with me, you know. Right. No, I'm going to bring out my son here, you know, in this $70 tuxedo, and we're going to, you know, let him sing a song with me, you know what I mean?
Right,
or hold the microphone while I, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then I realized, wait a minute, this is a little deeper than
something's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're glad it did. Tim and Timmy LeBeau, the LeBeaus, their new project is Sitting on Go, and you're listening to it today on Daniel, Britt, and Friends. The new project, Sitting on Go by the LeBeaus, they're in the studio now, and we're talking to Tim, who's the dad, and Timmy, who's the son. And with the talent that Timmy has is undeniable. But before we get to his story completely, Tell me, Tim, about the Elvis years. Was that kind of coupled with the country?
And, it was, I mean, yes. Elvis died in 77.
Yeah.
The week before, a fella had stood up at this country music place, because I'd been there, and he said, hey, y'all come back next week. I'm going to do Elvis. This guy said that. Not about me, about himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, on that Wednesday, I went back to that club, and Elvis had died that day.
Mm.
And so the people asked me to get up and sing an Elvis song. So I got up with this bluegrass band. You got to get a picture of this, you know. Mm. This, you know, right now, that was their style.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sing, I mean, literally singing through their nose, you know.
And, right, and, right.
So I got up with them and I did Blue Suede Shoes. I remember that. And actually, you got to
emphasis on blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never before, never since.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
lay off my bluegrass shoes.
That's right. That's right.
That's how that started with the Elvis thing. And people, I guess they thought I sounded a little bit like him. And, you know, I had watched him over the years. And
right.
Let me go back to something else, too, with my father about this. The Elvis thing. Mm. One time he came in and he caught me listening to Elvis on 8-track, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And he busted it up. I never forget that. Oh, yeah, just busted the thing up, you know, said there ain't going to be no Elvis in this house, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
And that was, you know, so, and it, in doing that, it did. It drove me to want to do that because of my rebellious nature. I was terrible. I was terribly rebellious. Put me in a frame of mind that I'm going to do my own thing.
And the continuation of the LeBeau story is after this from their latest project, Sitting on Go.
As I started my voyage, I set my sail in the wind. It carried me out to sea. I had many good days, not a cloud in the sky, drifting in the ocean breeze. Soon my courage was tried, I felt excitement subside as the dreadful storm arose. Would I soon become prey to a cold water grave as Satan started rocking my boat? He started rocking my boat, rocking my boat, laughing as he saw my fright. Rocking my boat, rocking my boat into the blackness of the night. And anxiously I looked out in the tempest to see if the one who walked on water might come searching for me. In a sinking situation, praying hope really floats, with my adversary rocking my boat. That moment I knew it was out of my hands, for the tempest was severe. I caught a glimmer of light as someone came my way. Then I heard him say good cheer. Then I knew right away that I would be saved as Jesus took control. How my soul was saved that night that Satan started rocking my boat. He started rocking my boat, rocking my boat, laughing as he saw my fright. He was rocking my boat, rocking my boat into the blackness of the night. And anxiously I looked out in the tempest to see if the one who walked on water might come searching for me. In a sinking situation, praying hope really floats, with my adversary rocking my boat. In a sinking situation, praying hope really floats, with my adversary rocking my boat.
Featuring Timmy LeBeau, it's father-son duo Tim and Timmy, here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
And then Timmy comes along with a talent at seven years old. So this started in the studio. You've told that. At what point did you guys, I guess, probably, if I had to answer the question for you, I would almost guess that the answer would be probably took place somewhat after your voice change. As a guy, you know, you kind of are dependent on when the voice changes.
No, it was.
Or did you do some before then?
Yeah, I did some before then because, I mean, yeah. You know, I guess before your voice changes, I guess I could do some of that, the tenor.
Well, that's
parts,
true.
Some of the higher parts, but we got together full time though when I was 15. So
Remember just before Timmy when we did the
that's right.
I looked over Jordan. Remember that?
Yeah, I did remember that.
Yeah, you were like 12 then, weren't you? 13?
No, not even 13.
That's right.
Yeah, I was younger than that.
So you're traveling the church circuit at this point, going to churches and singing and wherever you can, and
pretty much parties.
Yeah. And that was unique, I guess, then, because you got a 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, you know, traveling, singing with his dad.
Yep.
Which I just would come up and do a song or two. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But, man, I remember when I was younger, of course, Mom always wanted to hear me sing. And I was for sure nobody else wanted to hear me sing. But, you know, she would tell me, you know, you need to do that song with your dad tonight. You know, people want to hear you do that. And I would make up every excuse in the world. I was sick. Yeah. Just anything. I have a headache. Yeah. I hated it. I would get so nervous. I mean, I'd get so tore up about it.
Wow.
And now basically they can't drag me off the stage. So it is funny how that worked out.
So who were your musical influences? And you grew up in the 80s. So, I mean,
I really don't have like a single influence. I've listened to so many kinds of different music. Of course, when I was real young, I listened to a lot of oldies, believe it or not, because my mom, she loved oldies music, so I grew up listening to them, and I can, you know, tell you the words to about every Elton John or Billy Joel song or, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, the Drifters.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, really. So I heard a lot of that, and then from there.
A lot of spiritual influence there, right, son?
Yeah. We heard your spiritual influence. But yeah, sadly, I guess a lot of influence I got was other music other than gospel. Because I started listening to more gospel. Actually, I remember the first gospel CD I got. It was a Gaither Vocal Band CD. It was the the one with the Build an Ark on it and
with Buddy Mullins.
Remember yeah, with Buddy Mullins, exactly. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Do you remember the name of that CD?
Testify.
Testify. That was it.
Yep.
And man, I remember I had a CD player set up in my bedroom that my grandpa gave me. I thought it was the neatest thing. It was made of wood. It was about 4 feet tall. You know, had speakers built in on the side. Wow. But I'd blast the speakers out. You know, with the Testify CD. And that was my first introduction, I guess, into Southern gospel music. Listening to that, and then from there on, I mean, I got introduced to Michael English, obviously, and he's been a big influence. Always loved anything he's ever done, and like I say, just so I could go probably forever. Just people that I really, really, really like, and I guess grabbed little bits and pieces here and there from different singers that
Michael
I love.
Michael Bolton,
yeah, I mean anything, yeah. Michael Bolton, love him. Brian Adams.
You do play guitar as well, right?
No, I play. Actually, I play drums, but I don't.
You
haven't
do some
carried him
guitar.
On the a little bit.
You didn't lean toward that. Drums, man, he can play.
Really,
yes, but I haven't started. On the road with them yet.
I'd be interested to see singing and playing drums at the same time. You know,
well, you know, Karen Carpenter used to do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. For real. Honestly, she used to before. Yeah. They got real big. She played drums and he played piano. And they told her that she needed to be out front, so they told her to stop playing drums.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she'd play drums and sing. So I guess it's possible.
Timmy's been singing. I said, Timmy, you really need to quit singing and start playing drums.
Yeah. It's the opposite.
Well, speaking of Michael English, he is he took part in this recording in the song that you did, Don't It Make You Want to Go Home. And I think one of the co-writers was from New Song on this song. And he's basically backing you up. I mean, how does that feel to love the guy so much that you grew up listening to his music and now he's helping you out on a project?
It's... I can't even put into words because it was a big surprise. Michael Sykes, which who has produced our last two CDs, he's been friends with Michael English for years, and Michael Sykes knows how much I, you know, look up to Michael English and how much of an influence he's been on me, and they did it as a surprise for me, and even to this day I'll still listen to the song, and he just kind of, you know, hit me. That's Michael English, you know, singing on that song with me.
The morning paper is reading like a scroll, like a headline from 2,000 years ago. Everywhere I look, I see the signs. My heart's telling me it's almost time. And don't it make you want to go home? Run through those gates and fall in Jesus' arms. And know the cares of this world will be gone. And don't it make you want to go home? I can't wait to sit at Jesus' feet and hear him say, welcome home to me. I can almost feel his warm embrace and his nail-scarred hands as they wipe my tears away. Don't it make you want to go home? Run through those gates, fall in Jesus. And know the cares of this world be gone. Don't it make you wanna go far away from this world of pain? God's prepared a perfect place, and I can't stop doing thinking about.
Michael English making a guest appearance. It's the LaBeau's Project, Sittin' on Go. And they're our guest in the studio today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
We've been so blessed, man. When I you know, a lot of people, man, they dream of something like that. To have somebody as big of an, you know, influence as Michael English already singing on a CD with me, that's, you know, what a blessing. You know, honestly, it's there's just, we could go on and on how many blessings that we've had, but like I say, I still listen to that and can't believe that he's on there. It's really neat.
When did you meet your wife?
Well, I actually met her at our home church that we were going to at the time. And when I first met her, I was
smitten.
Oh yeah, totally. I was 16, and she was 18. She's 2 years older than I am, so you can imagine she, you know, looked at me as a little boy. Then this is a funny story. Actually, I remember when Dad was singing by himself, he sang it. They had like an outdoor picnic type thing at our church. And my dad went and sang there. And I remember Kimberly said she remembered seeing me there. And then I was probably 14 years old or something, and going through that awkward, you know, fat stage. And for some reason I've hit it again. But anyway, she was older than I am driving. And she said she remembered seeing me there. And she, you know, she's like, well, that must be his son, you know, his little boy, you know.
Yeah.
And then I went I just thought that was funny because I didn't see her. I don't remember seeing her, but she remembers that, you know, seeing
right,
me.
Right.
Because we weren't at church a lot. You know, that was our home church, but we weren't there a lot because he traveled and sang. So,
yeah.
And I remember going back when I had started to sing with Dad. And so I sang then, and you know, then she was impressed. You know, she, yeah. then, you know, I'd lost some weight, you know, got a little older and had a little facial hair. And I first liked her there. And like I say, I was a little young. And then after I sang there, she started to like me. And of course, I thought, you know, I'd already been rejected by her.
Right.
And so I was
right.
like, you know, she don't care and all that stuff. Right. And then it was later, it was probably, I'd say maybe a week at the most later, after we sang there, she called the house. She had called the house looking for me because she was at college, but she was back in town. And at the time, there was this girl that would not leave me alone. She just would
right.
just call all the time. And you know, it's one of those things, you're like, I'm not here. You know, you're in the background doing that thing. And so my mom answered the phone, and it was Kimberly, but she didn't think it was Kimberly. She thought it was that other girl. And she was like, oh, you know, Timmy's not going to want to talk. And she said she remembers looking at me at the bottom of the steps, and she was like, you know, telephone Timmy. And I was like, oh, you know, let me just, you know, get on there. Because any other time I just would have been like, you know, I'm not here or something, you know, not being mean, but just.
Yeah.
And and it was her. It was Kimberly.
Yeah,
and
she
I was
took
just,
it.
Oh, yeah. I was impressed. She said that, you know, she was in town and wanted to maybe go out to eat or something. And I remind her of that daily, that she called me first.
Exactly. But you do. Well, being the older one, you know that.
Yeah, it was something. It really is neat. I mean, I could sit here and talk probably for an hour about how we, you know, how everything worked out, how we got together, and really feel like that, you know, God was a part of it. And
let me jump in here. I remember Timmy told me when he was 15, when he started singing with me, he was 15 years old, and when he never forget, he said, Dad, he said, I'm gonna start praying for a wife, not 15.
Yeah,
and I guess he began to see that. You have to be careful out here in our line of work.
Mm, right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a different line of work, and you get a little more attention than maybe, you know, someone working in a factory. Nothing wrong with that. But you understand what I'm saying? You're out there in the public's eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him telling me that specifically. He said, I'm going to start praying for a wife.
And you weren't an only child, were you?
No. I had three other brothers.
Yeah.
At the time.
And so you were the youngest, though.
Mm-hmm.
Any of them show any interest in music at all?
No, they were, you know, they're all older than I am. Actually, one passed away when I was 13. He was only 18 at the time, and I was 13. And none of them at all showed any kind of interest in music or anything like that. But I guess I was the only one that picked up on it and really liked it.
So no quartet in the works down the road today?
No,
because he won't give me no grandkids, you know?
Yeah, right.
No quartet that I know of.
Be a while.
Only what the Bible says is so. Jesus loves me, this I know.
Well, how did you find Michael Sykes, or how did you get introduced to him to know that, man, this is a guy that has produced some of the greats in our field, and we'd like his fingerprint?
Man, it was obvious. I mean, you look on the back of any you know, good CD that Spring Hill, you know, put out. You know, Spring Hill, back when they were big, their record label, anything that came out had Michael Sykes' name on it. You know, anything Gaither Vocal Band, anything Jeff and Sherry Easter. You know, I remember he did one with the Booth Brothers and Karen Peck and New. I could keep going on and on and on. And of course, I started noticing this. You know, of course, I noticed it the most when they're joining the camp. CD came out.
Yeah.
I remember I was blown away. I went to the
Ponder Sykes and Wright.
Yeah, Ponder Sykes and Wright. Yeah. The Join the Camp CD. I remember going to our local Christian bookstore, and they were featuring that CD. You know how you can go up and put the headphones on, you can push and get a sample of the songs.
Yeah.
And the sample song was Jesus Holds Your Hand. And at the time, nothing sounded like that or sounded that good to me in Southern Gospel. It was such a nice change. That's when I really started noticing his name. I know I had seen it before, but that's when I really, really started noticing it. And of course, I would pick up CDs and buy them just because his name was on it, because I knew it would be good.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's how that came to be, because I was like, man, if we're going to do anything or get our own sound or make any kind of impression, we got to get him to help us out, you know, because we needed help. We really did. We may know how to harmonize, and we may know how to sing, and you know, you put words in front of us, so we can sing. But it's a totally different thing when it's new songs or, you know, and you have to start from scratch, you definitely need help and, and a direction to get your own sound. It's easy to sit in a car and sing along to a song and do it just like so-and-so did it, you know? Yeah. And, well, I tell you, Michael, he's a genius. He's a genius and able to pull the best out of you and yet, you know, and push you in a direction, but at the same time, let you keep your own style and stay the way that, you know what I'm saying? And keep what makes you, you. And
exactly.
Yeah, I could go on and on about him too, because he's, he really is a genius. He don't take enough credit for it, but he's very smart.
With his fingerprints on here, again, we talked about Michael English co-producing a song and and singing backup on one of the songs on this thing. And it's the project's called Sittin' on Go. And the website is thelebeaus.com, and that's spelled L-E-B-E-A-U-S, thelebeaus.com. And you can find more information there. You guys are traveling as often as the phone rings, you know, and keeps the schedule booked. So you guys are definitely open for that. And this is your calling in life, is to be able to spread the message. So, and I think you do it with class and with style. So
thank you.
That's why we wanted to have you here. What does your outlook look like? I mean, do you guys have visions or hopes or dreams for what, you know, 2010, 2011 and so on would look like?
Man, I used to have goals and set things, set dreams, but it seems like every time I've set a goal or some kind of a dream, you know, God seems to have something better planned and does something totally unexpected. And I've kind of stopped doing that. We were talking actually the other day about something we wish we could do. And I was like, you know, so I've really, in ways, I've kind of let that dream almost go. If it happens, that's great. That is, you know what I'm saying? That would be so nice for that to happen. But at the same time, it's like things are going so good for us and God has been so good to us. If that never happens, man, we could stop today. And if everything literally stopped, what we've already accomplished and what we've already done, I would be tickled and forever grateful. Because just so much more has happened than I thought would thought would ever even happen. So,
wow.
And I mean, that's not a good maybe answer to your question. What kind of goals and dreams do we have? But I mean, of course, man, the bigger the crowd, the better. The more people we can sing to, the better. The more that people get to hear our songs, the better. But you know, like I say, especially with even your guys' help here at Daniel Britton Friends, this thing here, you know, this interview is getting our name out more and more and more. And you know, we're grateful to you guys too for what you do. But we're going to keep doing what we're doing
and
sitting on go. And that's another funny thing about the title of the CD. There's not a song on there called Sitting on Go.
Yeah,
we didn't want to come up with a name that, you know, was the typical, you know,
one of the songs.
One of the songs, or just we wanted something different, kind of fresh and a little almost country sounding too. And my wife came up with the name, and it just kind of it really hit home. We were like, man, that's how we feel right now. Yeah. We're just sitting on go, waiting.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, God, use us. Do what you need to. You know, we want to go out there and do your work. We're sitting on go, man. We're eager and ready to do it.
That's where we are. I so agree.
It really is.
Come against me, come with me, and bring distractions, bring your gains. Whatever lies in wait for me can knock me down when I'm already on my knees.
I'll be watching, you know, and hoping for the best for you guys. I think it's the great music that you've put out, and again, funny name, serious music, and I think that really carries the whole theme of what you guys have done. Not only on this project, but the one before too. I mean, you had some great songs like My Kind of People and Lost and Found. So You Would Know. I mean, great hits off of that other album too. So good job. And it shows the power too, not only of great talent that you have, but also putting that marriage together with a great producer just to pull it all together. So guys, you're great to stop by, and we'll be listening for more from the LeBeaus.
Man, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Daniel Britton Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britton Friends.